This episode of Football 301, a very special guest, Trevor Sikkema for PFF, joins me to buy and sell playoff teams as true Super Bowl contenders. That final tier. Can they win the big one? Spoilers, a lot of AFC teams can, and actually more NFC teams than you think can. But we also wrap up the show with a few favorite prospects to watch in just the playoff and beyond. Very fun show at Trev. It was so fun talking to him. I hope you guys enjoy this. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome back to Football 301. I am Nate Tice. I'm joined by a very special guest today because we're going to buy and sell some playoff teams. And we're going to wrap it up with a little prospect slash playoff chatter. We'll see where the conversation goes. But I know there's another sicko in this business who travels much more than I do to do all the sicko stuff that he has to do. That can talk about NFL playoff races and playoff matchups and also keep an eye, one eye of Sauron. There's only one eye of Sauron, but one eye on the NFL draft. It's my guy from PFF and the NFL Stock Exchange, not the New York Stock Exchange, the NFL Stock Exchange. Trevor Sikkema, how are you doing today, Trevor? Great to see you.
Nate, I'm doing fantastic, man. Always love getting to talk a little ball with you, whether it's here on this show, our show, like whatever it is. And so I'm excited, man. Exciting time of the year. You and I obviously were talking a little bit before we hit record. Like, we are ready for the playoffs. Yes. Very much ready for the playoffs. Let's get to, okay, all of these matchups are good. We have things that we're talking about here. So very excited for this topic and excited to talk some ball with you.
Yeah, you know, we got a couple of loser leave town eliminator matches in week 18, but we'll preview those, you know, later this week, me and Chuck will. But still, we're going to talk about it because it's a wide open playoff race. I mean, literally last night, the team I feel the best about, the LA Rams, lose to the Falcons and get run on by Bijan Robinson. That's just, you can't really plant your flag anywhere, it seems like, with these playoff teams.
And you know, it's not really the Rams' fault because this is all destiny to set up the most chaotic, illogical finish in the NFC South possible. So honestly, it's not even the Rams' fault. They had no way that they were going to win this game. The destiny was against them. It was all setting up for just the dumbest, wildest finish in the NFC South. So I can't even blame the Rams for that, honestly.
I know. Yeah, the Falcons win week 18. The Panthers win the NFC South. Doesn't even matter what happens in that game. So just like even that game that was interesting, just like loses a little bit of luster, which is so fitting for that. I have a lot of NFC South angled people as guests here. You know, Chuck, Falcons fan,
right?
Matt Harmon, a, you know, former Panthers fan, as he says, but I can tell there's a little special place in his heart. And you have, of course, some affiliations with the Bucs as well. So it's, you know, I just need Seth Galina, I guess, you know, the one Saints fan I know in my life. Just get him on and I can just round out the NFC South.
That'll do it. That'll do it. Just once every, you know, 4 weeks, you're just rotating these fans of misery teams in this division and you can cover it all year long.
Get all four of you on here and just take turns punching each other in the nuts. That's
you wouldn't even have to host. You'd just go. And everybody would each rant for 20 minutes and you'd be like, thanks for joining us here on the 301.
I'm giving you guys all Hulk gloves and just start wailing on each other. Just whoever comes out on top. No one comes out on top because that's how the NFC South feels. It's just like, all right, you guys get to play against the Rams or the 49ers or whoever is the seed five.
What a gift. What a gift.
Yeah, it's a gift. But this is what's fun, though. Even the teams that are locked in might be the one seed. There's no like real perfect, you know, juggernaut team. And I think that's going to be even more, I've just stated this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And that's kind of just like grading all this stuff out. And we joked before, it's like, that's why we can't wait for the playoffs. Because it's just like, I could say, well, this matchup will matter, but I don't know if they're going to play them until this round or this.
Right.
So that's why it'd be nice once we get there, get to the playoffs, get to the dance. But today we're going to go AFC, then NFC. We're going to look at the teams that are locked in or potentially locked in if you're looking at the NFC South and, you know, and AFC as well. And just go, are we buying or selling this team as a true contender? You know, there's a difference between playoff team, to me, a playoff team that can win a game, which I think is the next step, and then a true contender, which I think is the hardest thing to get to as an NFL team, where you actually have that. It's a lot of incomplete teams. So we'll just start, though, with the AFC. We'll start with the Denver Broncos, who, with the Chargers sitting their starters, Justin Herbert's not playing. I mean, I'm sure they have to look into their training room just see who's even a live body in LA with this team right now, especially their O-line. But we got the Broncos who looked like they're going to be the number one seed or are lined up to be the number one seed. Have been kind of a depending what week you watch them, you'll feel very different about how their offense is and how their defense is. But right. both have shown good and shown just a little iffiness in recent weeks, recent months, the whole season. But buying or selling the Denver Broncos, Trevor, let's start off with them. How are you feeling about them?
I am buying the Denver Broncos. And it's good to have these conversations more than just, you know, what the social media graphic might say of just like, buy with no any extra context. Because when you look at the Broncos, yeah, their record's incredible. But when you look at how they've played, you know, not that betting is everything, but like against the spread, they're not nearly as good as you think that they would be. When it comes to some of these games that they have played, like I remember the London game, go back to the London game that they played against the Jets. They couldn't have wanted to give that game away more. And just the fact that they were playing the Jets, they end up coming out on top when the final whistle blew and there were zeros on the clock. But it's like, to me, the Broncos can play up with anybody. They can also play down to anybody. And I know that's a cliche, but this is the classic team to me of they play to their level of competition. I think they can beat the best teams in the NFL. I think they can hang with the best teams in the NFL. And then they play these teams that you should be so much better than, that it's harder for them to take care of business. And I know Sean Payton, you know, he's saying what he needs to say. And he's like, hey, you know, winning doesn't have to look pretty all the time. And like, I get, obviously, he's right. It's an extremely competitive league. I think that Bo Nix has the ability to get to the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. I think their receiving core is good enough. I think their offensive line certainly is caliber of a Super Bowl type of team. The run game, RJ Harvey's coming along a little bit here on the end, and so they'll definitely need that. And then, of course, the defense speaks for itself with how talented that is and how good that they are. It's simple, but it all just really rests on Bo Nix's shoulders. He has the ability to give you some of the best throws that you have seen this season, and he also has the ability to, you know, put the ball in harm's way. And something that I had looked up a couple of weeks ago, specifically, what was it, that Packers matchup, I think is the one that I was looking at, but I took the scale a little bit further throughout the whole season. When Nix is getting rid of the ball before 3 seconds, his numbers are phenomenal. I mean, yep. He's a great passer, a lot of big-time throws, very few turnover-worthy plays. When he recognizes it pre-snap and him and Sean Payton have things dialed up, he has the arm talent, he has the athletic ability, he has everything to be able to put the ball where it needs to go. When that time to throw gets over 3 seconds, that's when, and specifically in that Packers game, you see him like, just hesitate like a half second, maybe like double clutch a throw and then try to get rid of it. The throw is late, it's a little bit off the mark, and so when things are working well, Denver can beat anybody. But it's truly going up against these really good teams. What version of Nix are you going to get? And can, I talk about this all the time with people. It's not just like winning one game against a really good opponent. If you're the one seed, it's different because you get the bye, obviously. But you have to win 4 games in a row or 3 games in a row to be crowned Super Bowl champions. So you're not just trying to beat one team. I could tell you that Denver could beat one good team in the NFL. Am I going to get Bo Nix for 4 straight games to win a Super Bowl? That's, I think, the big conversation here with Denver. But all of that to say, they have the recipe. They've got the head coach. They have the talent at quarterback. They got a great defense. I got to buy them being a true contender.
I'm buying them as well. And really, just a lot of what I'm going to say is going to repeat what you said, just my own version of it, my own verbiage. It's really the defense first. I'll start with them. Is the defense is still good. It's just that they're a little more pickable as the season's got along. And that, and even I just looked at the numbers, I'm going to bring up this a lot. I really like to look at splits after bye weeks or in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Or if they make a change, like the Steelers, like moving Ramsey around, like, you know, every team, Jacoby Myers for the Jaguars offense, like spoilers for what I'm going to talk about later. But for the Broncos, they're 10th in defensive DVOA in the back half of the season, 7th in rushing, 10th in passing. That feels exactly right to me. They're like, they're not the top three. They're more like that 6-12 range to me, which is still good, which is still carry you to the Super Bowl and help you out. Why I bring that up is that the offense has to be better because the defense isn't the freaking 2001 Ravens. It's not one of these defenses that can the 2000, would it be the 2005 Bears? Where they that or 2006, the Rex Grossman year, that just can carry you, and the offense is just whatever, you know, and it just goes on. And most times, you have to have at least an above average offense if you have an elite defense. And what's encouraging since week 9, the Broncos offense is 10th in DVOA, so the defense and the offense are exactly the same. Doesn't always feel that way, but they have played better opponents. Because there's some adjustments there from FTN's DVOA stat. Their thing is the rushing game, the run game has gotten a little bit more consistent, a little bit better. Their offensive line is good. Garrett Bowles has played like an all-pro at left tackle this year. I think their center got hurt recently, which is, you know, something to keep an eye on. I think it was a center. So yeah, one of the interior linemen got hurt. And so that's something to keep an eye on. But the run game, they found, you know, what RJ Harvey's a little bit better at. RJ Harvey isn't perfect in every type of run. He's getting more comfortable running between the tackles, which is huge. So they're, since week nine, they're third in running back rushing success rate. So just success rate on running back runs, which is like, that's very encouraging. Not what I thought, to be honest. I thought they'd be more league average-ish, you know, like 38-39%. No, they're third. And I was kind of like, did I have a wrong filter on? Like, am I clicking through my stuff? Like, nope. Third, and that's huge to me because, all right, if the defense is good enough, they can get sacks, they can play man coverage, which I always think is a, if you can rush four and win and play man coverage and win, those are aces in the hole in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Sorry, well, spoilers about the Texans.
Yes.
But yeah. Who, spoilers, feel really good about right now. But this offense and this passing game, and I'm glad you brought up the Packers game because that was probably the game I was most encouraged about how Bo Nix played. And also feeling a little bit worse about the Packers. He threw a touchdown in the red zone or just outside the red zone, threw one of the best throws of his career, dig route, I want to say, or a post, skinny post to Franklin, I believe it was. And that exactly what you're saying about if Bo is comfortable with what he's seeing and what the play is, wow, you can see his traits. You can see his arm strength. You can see all that. It's, you can truly tell how their passing game is going to be by watching Bo Nix's feet. As soon as you see him straddle, oh no, it's not going to be a good bow day. If you see him always, his shoulder is facing the line of scrimmage, we're good. Front shoulder, yep. We're good. Yep. But as soon as he takes that extra hitch, he's the ultimate example of listening to your feet, which is a Paul Christism. And that is always what he would say. And that's something I, when I evaluate quarterbacks, I always watch. And that Packers game was the most I've ever seen him just one hitch throw, which means he's comfortable with what he is seeing. Are we going to get that every week? The Jags game was up and down. Like, and that's the thing is like, once you get to playoff time, these coaches, the good coaches, look at everything that you put on tape and they're going to hone in on all the stuff you're good at and make you do, make your weaknesses weaker. They're going to try to do that. So you have to just mitigate those. And why I'm bringing that all up, the number one kind of bugaboo I have about the Broncos is explosive passes. Is they are 28th in explosive play rate. They're 29th in explosive runs, 28th in explosive passes. So if you get against a defense that's clamping down on the run, not and Bo's kind of up and down, nickel and diming, it's going to come down to how many big plays. So feel how many big plays they can generate, which is sometimes it looks great. Courtland Sutton's dunking on a guy. Troy Franklin has his moments. Pat Bryant's out there doing some good stuff when he is healthy. Marvin Mims. Harvey's catching a swing and going big. But like the Jaguars game, when those aren't popping, it can be very frustrating. It can be a lot of three and outs, and we're giving the ball back. Bad, the punter's good, but bad field position, and that just kind of catches up over four quarters. So really, that's the big thing for me. That's my one thing I'm looking at is how they generate those explosives. Sean Payton's great at dialing them up, but it's kind of Bo Nix has to deliver on them, especially against defenses more keyed in on them.
I'll be interested to see what their first matchup is in the playoffs, yeah. Like whether they get the one seed or not, because sort of what you talked about, I think it's a really great call out with him having his shoulder, you know, pointing towards the line of scrimmage versus not. Is this a situation where, you know, the best way to guarantee that there will be a handful of those plays is A-gap pressure, right? It's stuff up the middle. It's like, okay, let's force him to get out. And then we are forcing him to reestablish the position that he needs to deliver a really good pass. Cause it's, you know, it's when he starts moving that he, like you said, like gets comfortable with these like split stance shoulders sort of square to the line of scrimmage. And like now he's doing this like weird sidearm thing. And if you can get a gap pressure, you're guaranteeing that he's going to move one way or the other. So I wonder if that will be a key matchup that he gets there.
A running theme, especially when we talk about the AFC teams, they're going to be so susceptible to matchups. It's going to be like, and Bo Nix has clear splits against zone coverage and man coverage, and it makes sense when you watch them. Man coverage is because how Payton runs things. You can just iso ball Sutton and Franklin sometimes, but you can just iso ball him. It cleans up his reads, and that's when you see some good throws, some good ball placement. And then zone is when it kind of becomes up and down. Yes, there's some highs, but then it becomes a little bit more scattershot. He runs outside the pocket more than anybody. And throws the ball away. So there's a lot of kind of dead plays that happen because of that. And yeah, it's it's just one of these things. I see some highs with this team, and it's really, I feel like a broken clock, because not a broken clock, but I'm just like, I'm repeating myself. Is the first month of the season when I was breaking down the games, I was going like, if you survive these big plays, these shot plays from Sean Payton, you can beat the Broncos. Then it got a little better. And then now I kind of feel back to that.
Sure.
And right, it's kind of like, right, I feel like I wasted a year of analysis just going like, yeah, it's kind of how I feel when I felt about in September about the Broncos, as I'm back there in December. But having said that, still feel pretty good about them overall. Let's get to the other team battling for the number one spot, but they need the Broncos to lose to get that. Could be the 2, could be the 3 seed, I believe, as well. That is the New England Patriots with, you know, a potential MVP winner at quarterback in Drake May. But yeah. I don't know if the defense is winning any MVP awards, but the Patriots, Trevor, buying or selling them as true Super Bowl contenders?
I think I have to buy this team.
I think you just buy because anyone,
like you mentioned, like they are, and I'm reluctant to say that really when you look at what this team was last year, how far they were away, how few wins they had, how bad the coaching staff was, how bad the offensive line was. And they made a lot of changes that have hit immediately in year one. And I almost, when I look at the Patriots, I almost like, I think this, I don't know if you're going to say this, but like the safe thing might be to be like, okay, they've had a really good year, maybe not buying them this year, but I'll probably buy them over the next 2 years. Like, yeah. I think that's the safe thing to say.
Take the take down the road. Take can down the road.
Right. But look, I know it's the Jets, but Drake May looked like he was back at UNC this past week. He looked like he barely had to think. That it was just straight off of vibes. He went 19 for 21 last week. But if you look at the adjusted completion percentage, one of them was a drop, and the other one, his arm gets hit as he's throwing it.
And it was a kill shot. It was like a 30. He was trying to throw a 30-yard like bender. It would have been a touchdown. It just got batted. Yeah,
100% adjusted completion percentage with 250 yards and 5 touchdowns. Like I don't know how I don't call that team, especially with Mike Vrabel at the helm, knowing how good of a head coach he is. And then obviously the chemistry that Josh McDaniels and Drake May very clearly have together. I mean, they're playing as confidently as you could play. And I'm sure that you've talked about this because a lot of people talk about it. When it comes to making it into the playoffs, you want to be playing your best ball in late December, right? The New York Giants, 2 Super Bowls in the 2000s are all about that, right? You're not the best team in the world, but if you're hot when the playoffs start, you can win a ring.
Aaron Rodgers' only Super Bowl win. The Packers got hot in the last month and a half, and then they just kept it going. And then next year, they went 15-1.
Right? Yeah. They were wild card team.
They had to beat my dad. Only reason I remember this, my dad was with the Bears. They had to beat the Bears in week 17 just to make the playoffs. And it was a 10-7 type game, freezing cold. And so they had to win that. And then they made the run to the Super Bowl. And then the next year they went freaking 15-1.
And so obviously, you know, the Patriots aren't a wild card team, but they still feel like they're one of those teams that's just red hot right now. They're playing well, they're playing incredibly confidently. So a perfect team? No, but I have to buy this team because Drake has played. I love Drake May. I had Drake May as a top 3 overall prospect in that draft. Like, I thought he was an easy top 3 overall pick. And even with that being the case, I looked at him 7 or 8 weeks into the season, and I was like, is the regression coming? Like, are we about to take that? Because he's still sophomore year, only second year in the league. Like, is it coming? And it sort of did a little bit. But the drop-off wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. And now you have the Jets game 1 week before the playoffs is going to start. And he looked like he was playing against college kids out there.
Yeah.
So I think because of those reasons, I've got to take them as buy. I got to buy that they're legitimate contenders.
It's in most years, I'd just be like, oh, this was fun. You know, okay, cool year, but probably a flame out in the playoffs. But just how the AFC is made up, like, I like them as much as anybody because they're getting Will Campbell back. They're getting Milton Williams back as well. That's huge. The fact that they've been able to just be upright and be somewhat functional without their like pretty good starting left tackle rookie. And then I'll talk about the defense in a sec. But the passing game, is it's legit. I of all the games I rewatched first thing Monday morning, yesterday morning, was I watched the Patriots Jets game because I didn't have that game on my multi-view. I was just seeing the stats. I reviewed it afterwards. We talked about it briefly on the review show, recap show, and I watched an all 22. And like you said, it was just like it felt like a quarterback that went 21 for 21. They had a couple other plays called back for penalties, but the ball went to the right spot and a penalty happened. And then he scrambled a couple times. And I think the one sack he took was for -1 yards or 0 yards. So it was like, even his negative plays were actually turned out to be like, not that bad. And as someone that was a super high in Drake May, anyone that's kind of listened to me the last couple of years, my bold prediction was that I thought he would be an MVP candidate in his rookie contract, not second year.
Right,
if I thought it was second year, I would have been a little bit bolder with my takes this summer.
Right.
I was just like, he's going to have a great year, probably maybe sniff a Pro Bowl. Like that was kind of like, he might get there, but the AFC's stacked. So we'll see in year 3-4. I wasn't expecting this type of campaign. They're first an explosive place, the Patriots, who, when you first watch them, especially the first half of the year, it was a lot of nickel and diming, like a lot of just underneath stuff. And now I'm so glad you brought up the North Carolina stuff because now you're seeing it pop wide open. Since week 19, they're first in air yards per target, 10.26 air yards per target. The only other team above 2 or above 10 is the Packers, Jordan Love. That makes sense.
Right. And that was Drake May at UNC. He led college football in big time throws during his sophomore and junior years, the last two years that he was there. Like that's what he wants to do. And he was doing that at the same exact confidence level that he was at UNC, which is crazy to say that he's doing that now in the NFL.
That's why I loved him. It was he can create explosive plays with his arm or his legs. And I thought that's the hardest thing to do. And the fact that he did it just so confidently, like it wasn't like, hey, you just had a bad play there. Now you got to push the ball again. I was like, no, he's like, yeah, I got it. Don't worry. Here's another 25-yard seam ball.
Right.
No, but they're first in so many stats, like since week 9 or full season. Since week 9, they're fourth in passing DVOA. So even if you adjust for the weaker schedule, it's still impressive stuff, like the Jets game. The run game hasn't been great, but it's been better, and actually better than I even assumed. Since week 9, they're 16th in running back rushing success rate. Average. That's all they need to be. Average, because the passing game's so explosive. And I think what's cool about May is that every game he can kind of target. It's not the ideal, perfect pass catching group, but he can really just target a whole bunch of guys and kind of against man, against zone, first knee peeper dropback, first in net yards, every stat you want to see. Now the defense, this is where I'm a little worried, and they really need Milton Williams to come back because since week 9, I'm sorry to just drop a whole bunch of stats on you, but dead last in EPA per run. 30th in yards per rush.
They're dead last? Damn. I knew they weren't good. I didn't know they were dead last.
Dead last. 30th in rushing success rate. 30th in rushing DVOA. 30th in run stuff rate. 32nd in yards before contact. 2.29 yards before contact per run play. That is like Derrick Henry after contact.
Right.
28th in explosive runs allowed. 30th in sack rate. 30th in interceptions per attempt. But their passing defense has gotten better and improved. Because I think they've trickled in. They kind of figured out, hey, we got Christian Gonzalez and we got Carlton Davis. Like, let's let them go. Let's let them jam guys and play more man. So it's a defense that right now is 21st in DVOA since week 9. So it's a below average defense. And I want to just see with Milton Williams coming back if that can improve enough. But I am buying him because I just buy the quarterback. And I think the offensive infrastructure is enough. Even if I think, the run offense is a little and defense is a little dicey right now.
Right. I think Milton Williams helps for sure. And getting him back will be big. But
if
you can be a little bit closer towards average, I think this team does have a shot at the Super Bowl.
Just got to be average. And that's really, but we'll talk about a couple more of these teams. But the AFC is going to come down to not maybe having the best units, having the least worst unit. It's like, that's really what it is. Who has the most average bad unit, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't have glaring weaknesses in the playoffs because these teams are too good. They'll be able to take it. And the head coaches are too good. They'll be able to take advantage of you.
So many good coordinators. So, I mean, even if people think, Lamar's not, he might make it, but Mahomes isn't in it. Oh my God, these playoffs. It's like, dude, there's still so much talent.
Yeah, there is. it's just new talent. It's different talent.
All right, we'll go to the Jaguars. One of the most fun teams to watch over the last month or two, especially since that Jacoby Myers trade. I'm excited to talk about this. But buying or selling the Jags as Super Bowl contenders, Trevor.
I'm buying the Jags. I am.
I am too.
I hate to just be like, oh, I'm buying every team. I'm not buying every team in the AFC. I know we can recap that maybe if we don't get the full breakdowns of some of these teams. But I have to buy the Jags specifically because, I have just so much faith in that coaching staff there. I mean, it's not Liam Cohen. It's just Liam Cohen. Like, it's Udinski. It's Campanelli. It's like all of those guys on both sides of the ball have these guys playing so well. Yes. And what I love the most about the Jags is I understand, like, over the last month, you know, 4 or 5 week sample size, Trevor Lawrence has played fantastic, right? I mean, like, he has been some of the best versions of himself really over the last month. And obviously that's where everybody looks to because they're like, oh, you know, Trevor Lawrence is fixed and all that. But even throughout the beginning part of the season, like when Trevor Lawrence was struggling and the Jags were sometimes still winning games, what I pointed out was Liam Cohen's an excellent, like, run game offensive mind as well. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that just because when he was with Kentucky, right, everybody talked about him and Levis. Yeah. When he was out in LA, it was him and Stafford. When he was with the Bucs, it was him and Baker Mayfield. And now, obviously, he was with Jacksonville. All the talk is like, oh, can he fix Trevor Lawrence, all this kind of stuff. But, and obviously, like, the quarterback gets the highlights. But as a Bucs fan, what I really saw from him that I liked that was different than Canales from the year before, because remember, both of those guys were just one and done offensive coordinators and play callers in Tampa Bay, is with Canales, that whole year went by and Tampa just struggled to kind of find an identity on offense. Yeah. It was a very even split between like zone blocking scheme stuff and more like power stuff between the tackles, more like gap scheme runs. And it just didn't feel like Canales was able to find what the Bucs actually did best. And you'll be close to 50, but you know, when you identify, I think, the strengths of your offensive line and the backs who are taking the ball, you kind of lean a little bit one way or the other. At least I think that that's normally the case. With Liam, he kind of did that in the first half of the season with the Bucs, but then in the second half of the season, he very much was like, we are a better downhill run team. Like I'm trying to get to the outside. We're trying to run outside zone. We're trying to let Chris Godwin be a great blocker and Mike Evans be a great blocker and all that stuff to the outside. But he's like, Bucky is better between the tackles. And he is our best back, and we are leaning much more into that. And there you saw Bucky continue to even have an even better second half than I think that he did in the first half. And I think it's because he was able to identify that. And I think when we got towards the middle of the season, I started recognizing some of the efficiency numbers in the run game, whether it was Travis Etienne or Bashaud Tutten or whoever it was, go up. And he was able to identify those strengths in the backs and on his offensive line to have a healthier run game to complement everything else. Now you've added Jacoby Myers, who is a great blocking wide receiver, and you got Parker Washington as well. And so now all of a sudden, it's so funny looking at this Jags offense that was basically Brian Thomas Jr. or bust through the first 4 or 5 weeks of the year. And now it's like, yeah, all right, if he catches a couple of balls, it's all right, but probably going to win anyways. And now he's just become this complementary piece to an overall offensive ecosystem that is incredibly efficient and successful. So when you have a coach that can scheme up, can call, can execute things in a balanced way, run and pass the way that Liam Cohen is, I've got to take this team as buyers, especially because just on the defensive side of the football, I trust the talent, the aggressiveness they have there as well.
Yeah, their O-line, their defense, I kind of group the same. It's like, it's not the most talented unit I've ever seen, but they are well schemed. Nothing they do, I'm like, what are you doing? Like,
right. They just like, play super, I don't know,
sound,
efficient.
I don't know if
feels like.
Sound is the right way, but like they ever, like, if they lose, it's because a guy is just losing as opposed to a guy is just going to the wrong spot, if that makes sense. It's a physical loss, not a mental loss. And I think that's significant and why I get optimistic about schemes and what's going on. Sometimes it can, nothing gets better. I'm looking at you, Cardinals. And sometimes it does just keep getting better and better and better as they get more talented and they kind of like hone in the weaknesses or kind of just shy away from what they're bad at. And I think, I mean, the Myers trade, like, it started kind of for me as like a tongue-in-cheek kind of bit. Like, I was like, this is the most important player in the NFL. And it's actually come true. And it's kind of like, because like they are legit top 10 offense. And since he's joined the team, since week 10. I mean, this team right now, the overall, the Jags are sixth in DVOA, just overall. They're 15th in offense. I bet you since week 10, it's higher. Seventh in defense. And they're fifth in special teams too. They got a weapon at kicker. and their punter's pretty good.
Yeah,
their units are pretty good. But since week 10, when Myers joined, fourth in points per drive, sixth in score rate, so just score percentage on drives, fifth passing success rate, fifth passing DVOA, fourth in explosive dropback rate. And I thought the most significant one are these two stats right here. They're fourth in pass attempts at 10 or more air yards, and now 30th in yak percentage. And if you just think of Trevor Lawrence and his offenses and with Doug Peterson and everything, it was so dinky-dunky, so many screens, so many quick hitters. And they just said, well, if you look at that pass catching group, BTJ is not amazing. You know, he's okay on some screen stuff, but you want him downfield. Jacoby Myers, you want him intermediate and doing dirty work stuff. He's not a yak guy. He's just a strong pass catcher. Parker Washington, kind of the same thing. They're kind of cut from the same cloth in a way. That kind of starts making sense. Brent Strange, solid receiver and everything, but I'm not going to like dial up a whole bunch of underneath stuff for him. He's a good athlete and everything, but it's kind of, so everything you were just saying about how Liam Cohen figures out kind of like, hey, we're not good at this, but we're good at this. Once Myers came in, it all crystallized. And Trevor Lawrence has shown, I mean, that was always gotten him in trouble in the past, is sometimes he has a heat check moment, especially in the red zone, which even happened last week. He had a great game last week. Like, it's just a nice kind of sharpshooter game. And then he gets the one pick in the red zone because he blacks out and tries to go for a kill shot.
That was also, you talk about the Indianapolis one, the one that just happened.
He moved in the pocket and he changed his angle. Like, it was,
and it was also just like a hell of a play from Jermaine Pratt.
It was awesome.
Right? Like,
yeah.
it was a post clear out route against, I think it was quarters, if I remember correctly, or
yeah,
maybe it was
quarters
six,
in the red
six.
Zone. He carried.
And he's clearing it out. And then you got an out and up that the linebacker not only has to carry out, but then up. And he did like in the hip pocket. And so it's like, okay, that was kind of, so it was a little underthrown. But even that one, I just go, all right, Jermaine Pratt, good play.
Yeah.
Good play.
It was a great example of like the red zone too. Like, angles and timing matter so much because Trevor stepped up into the right. And that changed the angle of his kind of whole shot throw. So now you're throwing at the back right shoulder of Pratt, as opposed to if you're in the pocket and true, you're throwing it over the left shoulder of Pratt.
That makes sense.
It just changed throw angle. Yeah, I know. I watch too much Jags. But this is the run game for them is confusing to me because it was good in the first half of the year. And I think, but statistically, and I was like, you know, it's not all perfect. The line's not great. They know what they are. I think that maybe is the best way I can put it. They know what they are. And I think they just kind of know, okay, we're not good at this. We're not going to have you just double team all these guys because you guys will lose over time. So we have to do a lot of jet motion. We have to do a lot of shifting and get into the right play. That's why they run so many plays to the play clock, to zeros, because they're trying to get to the perfect play. It's a McVay line of thinking. It's very hard to do. But you can see the benefits, the dividends that are getting paid from doing the hard stuff now that you see, especially with Myers joined. But rushing-wise, since week 10, 25th rushing DVOA, 30th in rushing success rate on running back runs, which I thought was significant. But I think, again, if they can just get that just a little bit better, somewhere between what they show the first couple months and what they show in the last month, I this is a very live team, very, very live team. I think the defense is very opportunistic. I think they are really well schemed. It's not the perfect defense, but they really just know what they're doing in situations, and they have enough juice. I mean, Walker's been so good since he's come back. But, sorry, last little thought there. You mentioned the Bucs. And Liam Cohen going from the Bucs to the Jags, and why the Bucs are confusing to me is like they kept the O-line coach. The backs are back. Now they're getting healthier. The O-line got healthier. I know they're out mock, but the offensive line's gotten healthier. Something I kind of noticed was all that packaging play stuff. This is my theory. Cohen's run game brain is better for that. And I think the Bucs this year are trying to do the same thing, to emulate that, but kind of don't know the secret sauce. Like, they kind of go, oh, we're going to kill this play to this play. But the second play they kill to is into a loaded box or to a bad number count and everything. So it's like the process is the same, but what they're getting to is worse. It's just a theory I have mine because I've been trying. I know you are. I've been trying to figure out what the hell the Bucs are.
I mean, they just have we can talk about this a little bit more if we touch on Tampa, but like they just have a major lack of identity on offense. And I think because of the lack of identity throughout the entire season, they've just sort of leaned back on like, here you go, Baker. And unfortunately, that's been really bad this year because Baker Mayfield was an MVP candidate 6 weeks through the season. From week 7 to week 17, he's been one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. He has the most turnover-worthy plays in the NFL. He has the fourth most uncatchable inaccurate passes. He has the fourth worst turnover-worthy play percentage overall. Like, he just – and I don't – some people are like, hey, he's hurt. I hope it is.
Right.
I hope he's hurt at this point. Everybody's because hurt. This is now way too long of a stretch. We're 2.5 months now to where he has just not been nearly consistent enough for them to win games. And I think that to your point, sort of like how the offense is set up isn't really doing him any favors either. So I think it's just a bad year overall.
The easy buttons aren't as easy. That's just the how I've looked at it. All right. Well, what is easy is we're going to take a break real quick and then we'll come back. Quick hitters on some more AFC teams, and we'll get to the NFC after the break. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. We'll wrap up with a couple more AFC teams. How about the Texans? Buying or selling them as playoff or Super Bowl contenders?
Yeah, so I'm selling the Texans. I just don't think they're quite there on offense yet, specifically the offensive line. The offensive line's been better through the second half of the season, which has been nice to see, but I think the offensive line issues that they have fundamentally and just from a talent perspective right now, and also just the lack of explosiveness in the run game, which again is kind of like giving them spurts over the last month and a half. But I think the consistency to be able to lean on it just isn't there the way that they need to. Obviously, when you have the best defense in the NFL and you have a chance, because I mean, if you're holding the other team to 14, 17 points, sure, you have a chance to outscore them. But again, can Houston do that for four games in a row? I don't think that they can. I just don't think that they can. So a good team, need to get better on the offensive line. But man, just when it's been beautiful to watch really, really quick. It's been beautiful to watch how the Texans have acquired the talent on the defensive side of the football. Because you mentioned a little bit earlier in the podcast, just hinting at how good they are when they can go one-on-one. When you have one-on-one winners at both edge spots and both outside cornerback spots, it is the possibilities are endless of what you can do on that defense. You can be as aggressive as you want. Mm-hmm. You can call literally anything that you want because the two, I'm not saying like linebacker or safety. I'm not saying that like these things don't matter. But if you asked me, it's like, hey, you could have four positions on defense and you're going to get absolute world beater one-on-one winners. I'd basically tell you outside corner and one edge, maybe interior defensive line, right? Because like sometimes interior pressure is incredible. But the fact that they have on the edges, Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr., where you – because sometimes when you have an interior pressure guy and an edge guy who are great one-on-one winners, you still might be able to slide protection a certain way. You still might be able to get maybe not true doubles on both guys, but help out a little bit. When you put them on the polar opposites of the trenches, you can't slide one way. You're asking your running back to maybe pick up one of these guys one-on-one if you are trying to slide one way. So all that to say, I love the Texans defense. It's awesome to see how they were constructed, especially as a draft guy and a team builder guy. It's been fun. But I can't buy them as true Super Bowl contenders this year. I can't.
I am going to buy them just because it's the wide open AFC. But having said that, in a normal year, no, but it's like, you know, a team that like in last year's or maybe a couple of years ago, AFC playoffs, you know, when the Chiefs were good, Ravens were good. You know, it's like even the Bills too. It's like, all right, the usual top three. No, I wouldn't take the Texans in that. But it's like in this year, just because of who they go against, that's everything you just mentioned there with having two legit edge guys, true all pro worthy edge guys, not even just Pro Bowl level, is – all right, usually if you just have one, if you just have Von Miller for the Broncos, all right, we'll just chip him. Okay, we can just chip him. We focus on him.
You'll do what the Steelers did to Myles Garrett last week.
Yeah, yeah, just follow him around. make him wide out, wide 13 technique. Get your feet on the
numbers. One of the funniest offensive line game plans I've ever
unbelievable.
Seen. Unbelievable. How they handled Myles Garrett.
Did you see the next gen stat on that? About
no.
Oh, here, I'll pull it up. The Steelers had they chip blocked or double teamed Garrett 16 times, 41%. On the 23 pass rushes where Garrett did not draw extra attention, the Steelers threw a quick pass or ran a designed roll out away from Garrett 17 times. So only six true pass rushes they gave him. I brought the story about Michael Strahan when he was going for the sack record, and my dad was the line coach for the Vikings. They did the same thing, and they just like double teamed him, triple teamed him.
Yeah.
And Strahan and my dad kind of knew each other from when my dad played. And Strahan was yelling at my dad, going like, come on, Tice. This isn't fair. This is a BS, Tice. And my dad's like, you're not getting against us.
That's
like,
funny.
No way.
That's funny.
No, but when you – like, if you give chip help, though, okay, everything we just mentioned, we're on the same – I mean, the Texans, just watch them. It's one of the coolest defenses because they can do anything – and they can do it well, but they can do the hard things and do it well. They can rush four and create pressure. Mm-hmm. They have the fewest amount of unblocked pressures because they get, there's none of like these Vikings or Vikings defense pressures or even Broncos defense pressures where it's like they get the offensive line to slide. There's Nick Benito running full speed at the quarterback.
Right.
No, it's rushing four and we're just going to beat your ass. Like, and it's kind of awesome.
It's very much
the NASCAR Giants. That's what they did.
Yeah.
They rush four and they beat you up on the back end. It's the same kind of thing. Spags, I know, is funky defense and stuff, but that's how they did it when he was with the Giants. So if you have to give two guys chip help and you can't win a one-on-one, then those guys aren't getting on the route right away. And if the defense, like the Texans that could run man coverage with Stingley and all these guys, all right, now two guys aren't even getting out on the route. So right away. So those guys can go help out. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. We either help out the offensive line or we flood the passing lanes. It's just like you have to be on your, P's and Q's to beat them. That's why they're so awesome. And that's why I'm buying them, is because I think the defense is so legit and the offense has improved enough. I agree with you. It is not great. It's not amazing. I still think Stroud is good enough, of course, to win the Super Bowl. I still like him. I like where the pass catchers are at. Since week 10, since they made the offensive line shifts, they've been about a league average offense, just slightly below. Their rushing success rate since they shifted the offensive line in week 10 on running back runs is 18th, 38%. So you're just on that cusp, 40% where you kind of is the golden mark. So it's not atrocious. It's below average, which improves. In the AFC, I kind of keep them alive. All right. Chargers and Bills, buying or selling either of these teams? I'm going to tell you right away, I'm selling the Chargers. I can't trust the offensive line, and they can't stop the run. Yeah, I think Justin Herbert. I get it, but no, I can't trust that.
Chargers are unfortunately an easy sell. There's too many injuries, and they're still just too incomplete.
That's what it is.
So I think they have to be a sell.
And then Bills, I'm still buying them.
What am I supposed to sell, Josh Allen?
Right.
One of the best run games
in the NFL.
Yeah, I can look at so many things on the Bills. Like, oh, they've been inconsistent on defense. They've gone through their injuries there. It's been up and down and frustrating. Ah, they don't really have a number one pass catcher. They put too much on Allen's plate. What am I going to doubt, Josh Allen?
Yeah, I know.
I
love Drake May, but Allen is still the dragon in these playoffs.
I agree, man.
It's like he's still the guy. The guy technically has the belt, even if he doesn't have the belt in this playoffs. So it's hard. I get it. I watched the Eagles game too. I watched them too. Mm-hmm. And the Eagles have a freaking awesome defense. We got to remember that. But it's hard. They don't really stop the run that well. But again, look at all these teams we just talked about. Oh, we don't trust the Texans run game. Steelers, definitely not full sell on the Steelers. Jaguars run game has fallen off. Okay. So just going one after another, Patriots run game is below average at best. Broncos run game has gotten better, but it's probably more average, above average league. So it's not like they're playing the Rams or, prime Ravens run game. It's like it's more iffy run game. So that's why their pass defense, McDermott's been on freaking fire lately. Their pass defense has been so good and so well designed. Ninth in success rate in the back half of the season against the pass. They're second in interceptions. They don't get a ton of pass rush, but they're really well designed. So that's why I kind of feel almost Chiefs-y to me over the last few years. Or maybe early Spags Chiefs, where it was like, I don't trust the defense fully, but they're really well game planned.
Yeah.
And I trust the quarterback. And that's kind of... that's where I'm at with them.
An incomplete team and at times a frustrating team, but I can't call Josh Allen not a contender.
Can't bet against the Dragon.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't do it.
I can't. I'm sorry. I know it's simple, but I can't. All right, let's get to the senior circuit of the NFL. The AFC is the junior circuit. All right, the senior circuit of the NFL, the NFC. We'll start with the team that's, has the inside edge to be the number one seed, the Seattle Seahawks. Buying or selling the Seattle Seahawks?
I have to buy this team just because of how successful they have been. I get worried. What'd you say?
But with this formula, great defense, and then ride the Sam Darnold lightning.
Kind of. And again, I get a little bit worried about the Seahawks because, again, it kind of comes down to that. If they get the one seed, obviously it's one less game that you have to win and one less game you have to play, which I think would be huge for this team. Because it gets harder for me to envision them winning four in a row I love Jackson Smith and Jigba. Very clearly, you can build the whole passing attack around him. But without the tight ends, and if there's any sort of injury or limitations to the tight ends, they just don't have a lot of outside of him. And I think that we saw that this past week as well. And we're playing with fire a little bit here, where there have been some games this year where, for as good as the Seahawks have been, it's been a slow burn for them. Like, sometimes they don't really catch on until like that third, fourth quarter. And it's because I think they're trying to be more balanced outside of JSN, and they'll go, okay, we're going to try a couple of different things. And then their back's against the wall and they go, all right, just force feed him. And it works for them because he is that good. Is that going to work for you against the best teams in the NFL when we get to that point where you have to win again, 3-4 games in a row? I am buying this team, but the inconsistency of the run game at times, and then the lack of diversity in the passing game, does worry me outside of a defense that I think has all the talent in the world. The defensive line is playing incredibly well. You've got some just alien athletes in the secondary that Mike McDonald's having so much fun playing chess with. But I do think that this is a buy team just because of how much success they've had this season.
I'm buying them. I can't quit them. I really, one of the teams I feel best about in the weirdest way. Because I have so much faith in the defense, and I've seen McDonald. There's proof for me. It's like I've seen him put together game plans in one-off games, big games, playoff time that are really good. And they have talent. And the weaknesses of the defense, you know, like that, you know, the second linebacker is not the greatest, but it's like, that's the weakness, is the second linebacker.
Right.
Like, you know
right.
what I mean? Yeah, I mean? Like, okay, fine.
You'll take that every single time. 32 out of 32 GMs would take that every single time.
Your top 10 starters are good or better, and you have one guy that's maybe average or worse. That's fine. We're good there. And then offensively, it's highs and lows of Sam Darnold. And I know he gets a lot of attention, but the run game has gotten better. Since week 8, since their bye week, they are, 14th in rushing success rate and 17th on just running back runs. And again, I always say that 40% is that kind of golden number. They're at 39.3%. So they're right about average. 15th in EPA per play, 9th in rush, 18th in pass. They're explosive, especially on dropbacks. That's kind of the name of the game. But again, they're going to be game script dependent. But what's lucky for them is they have one of the best special teams and they have one of the best defenses. And so it kind of works for them that even though since week 8, they are 30th in turnover percentage, 15.3% of their plays have resulted in a turnover in the back half of the season, which is just a crazy high mark. This is where my brain, I don't know how to compute this, is that just going to change? Because Darnold's always going to be susceptible to one. Is that going to be, okay, is it good that they have shown that they can win? The Texans game is the one that comes to mind, that last week against the Panthers. That they can win despite all these turnovers and that they're going to blow teams out when it stops? Or is this just how they're going to have to win every week and this is just their thing? They're going to have the turnovers. That's what I don't know, obviously. I can't predict. I would lean to always having a turnover because of how Darnold plays.
Right.
But, all right, what if it's just one instead of two or three?
Yeah.
Then
if you tell me it's one, I feel pretty good about this team against anybody. But it's one of those situations where you're right. I think that Darnold, you can't expect him to play a perfect game. That's kind of just not the quarterback that he's been. And I worry about, okay, well, you get that one turnover by default, and then when we're getting in a rubber meets the road, it's really, you know, like coming down to crunch time. Again, Jackson Smith and Jigba is unbelievable. You should force feed him because he's that good. Do the better defenses and do the better defense coordinators go, okay, when he goes to this look against JSN, we're going to rotate to this. He's not going to see it coming. And like,
okay, we'll make Cooper Kupp beat us. You
something,
know, like,
right. Yeah. That's what I get worried about with this team if I'm going to get worried about it.
It's fair. It's so fair. And again, this, I know I just said, well, I don't want to get into every single one. It's another team it's just based on the matchup. Like there's a lot of off defenses they go against. Like if they play the 49ers, I think they blow them out of the water again. They're playing them this week. At least their offense against their defense and everything. But I would say just in playoff time, like it's so dependent on who they play. There's other teams that I think they match up great against. But if they play, you know, teams that have decent defenses, I'm like, okay, that can get these turnovers like the Eagles or something like that. Another team that has a great offense, I think, or a different team, I should say, that has a great offense and a pretty weak defense. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on this. Is the Chicago Bears, who I'll just start with this stat. Since week 8, they are third in offensive DVOA. They
are I believe it.
Yeah, they are one of the most explosive teams in the NFL, passing or running, which is huge. Their O-line's playing well. Their Caleb is making guys miss. They can attack with all these young players. They are a really cool offense. I am fully buying the offense. But, Trevor, are you buying the defense and the Bears as a Super Bowl contender?
Bears fans are going to be mad at me.
They're mad at everybody if you don't say they're the greatest things ever.
I'm selling the Bears for this year. Okay. And I'm close. I'm right on the line here. I love how Caleb has played. And it's even beyond the explosive plays, man. Like, I as somebody who does a lot of draft evaluation, never doubted for a second that Caleb is going to be able to complete the biggest passes that you need in the game, these crazy passes, these superhuman passes. Now, recreating the catch play at maybe even a more difficult angle. I didn't know if we were going to get that from him at this point in his career. But I mean, that's to tell you just how good Caleb Williams has been. But what I'm most impressed with him is you do a lot of quarterback evaluation. I'm sure you saw this at Oklahoma and at USC. There were so many times when Caleb would, all right, okay, I'm snapping the ball. I'm looking at a first read. I'm looking at a second read. All right, let me take off because I got that athleticism. All right, I'm going towards the sideline, towards the sideline, towards the sideline, towards the sideline. Okay, I've got one foot left. Nobody's open. Let me throw it anyway. And it was like this, that superhuman thing and that Superman play from Caleb Williams, where you could understand it at USC and at Oklahoma because their defenses were so bad. And you go, okay, well, I think he even said himself, like, if we don't score 50 points, we're probably not winning.
Yeah.
And so you have this mindset, but it's really hard to break those habits.
It is.
Especially
if you get away from it with it for
100%
your entire life. Well, your entire life. Yeah.
Last year, I thought he still struggled with it.
Yep.
This year with Ben Johnson, there's so many times when he goes to the sideline, throws it away. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, look at you.
When the highest throwaway rates in the NFL this year. Yeah.
And there are so many plays where he'll eat it. And he'll be like, no, it's all right. We'll fight another down. We're all right. I got Ben Johnson. I got the receivers. I got this offensive line. We'll be all right. And that growth from him has been so, so, so impressive. And so if we're talking like, next year after you buy and sell on the Bears, I'd be buying. I picked the Bears to make the playoffs. I felt like that they were going to be a wild card team this year. And so I've kind of figured that they'd be right here. They're even further along offensive-wise than I thought they were going to be.
I thought they'd sneak to like a 12th best offense, maybe get to 10th, but no, they've been top
five, they've been phenomenal. And so anytime you have an offense like this, it's hard to not call this team buyers. But I mean, overall defensive PFF grade, they're below 20th. Points per game, below 20th. Yards per game, below 20th. DVOA, I think they're like EPA per play, I think they're like 18th, but still, like, they are in the second half.
Yeah.
They're in the bottom half of basically every single defensive statistic, and they're
20th in EPA.
There you go. They're so dependent on turnovers.
Yes.
That when you get into the playoffs, you don't play quarterbacks who do that. Correct. As much. So I love the Bears, love the progress. I love Penn Johnson. I love the offensive play cars. I love how Caleb Williams is playing. The offensive line is great. The run game has been there for him. How great has Kyle Manungai been? I mean, like the juice that he has given this team, I never would have thought when I was watching. I liked him coming out of Rutgers. And now I'm like, dude, how are you faster? How
I swooped him up on all my dynasty faster? Teams, and I was like, all right, I might not have loved you in college, but this is great.
he has been unbelievable, but I'm not there with the defense. And I think some of the completion percentage stuff, not the completion percentage is everything, but it shows a little bit, it paints a little bit of the picture of how there's not quite that consistency that you want. There's the explosiveness, but there's not quite the consistency. Pair that with the defense. I think the NFC is too good. I'll sell them for this year.
You got to think just the NFC teams they play. Again, right. I think their offense is going to be able to score points, but now you're going against, okay, the Seahawks, we still think league average or better offense, okay? Eagles, maybe Eagles. But 49ers have one of the best offenses in the league right now. Rams have one of the best offenses in the league right now. And the Packers have one of the best offenses in the league right now. I know people don't think that, but they do. it's like truly, okay, most of these matchups I just named, only one offense, and the Eagles can still score points because they can rip off an explosive play at any moment. And that's what's scary about the Bears is they can let up an explosive play at any moment. So right. it's this is hard for me because I really like what they're showing and I like the offense so much. But do I think they can win a playoff? This is how I'm hedging. Do I think they can win a playoff game? Yes.
100%.
Do I think they can win the Super Bowl? No. So I right. technically am selling them as a Super Bowl contender. Yeah. I think this year has already been a huge success. I mean, obviously, making the playoffs the first time in X amount of years. Caleb has shown that he can be, at the very least, a good starter or better. At the very least, a top 12 starter, I think, in the NFL. And I think there's something to showing that, because Ben Johnson's a tough coach that asks for a lot of details. And this is why I was optimistic about it, is people are like, oh, him and Caleb are going to butt heads. And there's been talk about how they kind of did at the beginning, but I go, it's the best. Sometimes guys like Caleb, they actually need hard coaching and want hard coaching.
For sure.
People just assume they don't, just because of personality and everything else. Like, no, this is going to work great. And sure enough, you're seeing proof in the pudding. So I think that's just a great, I mean, Luther Burden has been tremendous. And I always believe, baby. Where'd you have him on your final
15th overall on the big board?
Okay, see, I chickened out. I had him like 28th.
His movement skills are too rare.
I get it.
And I get it. He was gadget. he was all, so many targets that he had at Missouri were gadget touches, real routes.
Those guys scare me. Yeah.
And I 100% get it. But I was like, dude, the way that he stops and starts, just get him with some sort of good route running coach. And we're cooking with gas. So,
dude, what's been remarkable to me is like how gritty he is. Like he'll block. He does dirty work stuff. Like that actually is why I'm like, I went from a guy like indifferent, that guy I'm like, oh, these are guys I hate. And now I'm like number one Luther Burden guy. waving the flag for him. Like, this guy's awesome.
that was one of those things where Missouri had a really tough year last year when he was there.
Brady Cook fell off a cliff. Yeah.
And he, the production wasn't there. Missouri wasn't really playing for a lot throughout the year. But I was able to talk to some people who were sort of very close to that program and around that program. And I asked them about Luther and I was like, former five-star recruit, obviously had a great underclassman season, didn't play great in his junior year, obviously. I was like, is he kind of like just like a selfish dude? Like when the team went, and they're like, no, this dude is a competitor. He is extremely competitive. And so then I was like, you know what? I'm in. Yeah. I'm in on a player like that. The ability and then having that mindset, I'll look over the last year that you had that was disappointing because I feel like the best is still yet to come for
him. Even after the last play in the last game against 49ers, he was like, they were like, oh, you hurt, what happened in the last play? He's like, man, I was just tired.
Yeah,
I was giving him my all out there. Like, I'm like, hey, hell yeah, man. Like, yeah, I don't know. I love Ndunze. DJ Moore's still frustrating everything. I love Colson Loveland. And Burden, I mean, they're set up, man. It's like they can do whatever they want with Swift. Swift's been so improved this year that like he was gone from one of my least favorite running backs to actually I appreciate how he's playing now. But man, it's like they're sitting in a nice spot right now. Ozzie Chipula showed a little bit at left tackle. It's cool where they're set up, but defense, not so much. My only stat with them, they're 24th in success rate. They allow they're 29th in explosive play rate allowed in the back half of the year. Like that's scary to me that they can let up a big play. And the thing that carried them was turnovers, which is always up and down. And I know Dennis Allen does some cool stuff that generates turnovers. I get that. But their third down defense, which was kind of their calling card in the first half of the year, since week 9, they're 28th in third down defense.
Yeah.
So again, it's like next year, they don't just generate enough pass. I really like Austin Booker. He's going to be a good player if he just stops spearing people. But it's just that it's like their pass rush isn't there. They can't really stop the run between the tackles. That's scary once you get to playoff time, especially against these NFC offenses. But love what their offense is showing. All right. Panthers, I'm assuming you're selling.
The Panthers and the Bucks, both of them. The Bucks don't have the identity that they need to. The defense looks very uninspiring. And on the Panthers side of things, like obviously they beat the Rams, you know, like they're a team that they can beat teams. The problem is that they're very reluctant to put more on Bryce Young's plate. And I don't really know why. In the games where they've allowed him to be aggressive, not that they've panned out every time, but like that's clearly your recipe for success. And
they're running.
There are just way too many times where they don't want to put the ball in his hands on first down. And it's like, okay, well,
they're very traditional play calling.
It's been very strange to me. Like they don't really want to. They had like a low pass rate on first down. I can't remember what the time stipulation was. I can't remember if it was like second half of the season or the whole season, but like they had a very low pass rate on first down, and yet they were like 30th or 31st in like play action on first down. It's like, all right, well,
yeah.
Now you're not even really helping yourself out. Like you're run heavy. You're run heavy on first down, but then when you do pass, you're not really creating any sort. It was just a very. I think that they're kind of still just figuring it out. And I think they're a year early. I really do. I think they're just a year early. So whether they make it or not, I'm selling the Panthers.
I mean, 7-8 wins for them is huge.
Great.
I mean, defense fantastic. Showed some life. Like Nick Gordon's played well as a rookie.
Yep.
Derek Brown. Horns played well. Like they showed life on defense, and then the offense. I mean, their skill guys are getting. I really like Mitchell Evans. I love T-Mac. Coker is looking like a legit number two. They're splitting them outside, which I keep bringing up because I think that's so interesting about what they can become. So they're set up. It's just, I think they're already ahead of schedule, much like the Bears. Yep. I like the Bears a little bit better or everything, like of course right. more. But yeah, kind of similar discussion with them. Couple more teams here. The 49ers. Buying or selling the 49ers, I will say their offense is freaking awesome, but that is not the conversation I think
to talk about with the 49ers. I have to buy the 49ers simply because of who's wearing the headset.
I get it. Is he your coach of the year?
He is to me. Yes.
He is to me too. Okay, yes. Cool. All right. We're building a group here because I think Kyle Shanahan has done the best coaching job he's ever done this year.
You can't lose Brock Purdy for 8 games, Nick Bosa for most of the season, Fred Warner for most of the season, and you're sitting here not just competing for a playoff spot, you're competing for the one seed in the toughest division in the NFL. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's
Kendrick
it.
Kendrick Bourne signed off the street, was your leading receiver for a couple of weeks, and nothing happened. They didn't drop off at all.
I have to trust the guy with the headset on.
I get it.
Especially if it's true what we heard on the broadcast, where if they make it to the NFC Championship game, Fred Warner's trying to play.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, all of a sudden, if you get Fred Warner back in the NFC Championship game and in the Super Bowl, I like you even more. Obviously, they've got, not that the Super Bowl is not motivation enough, but the light at the end of the tunnel is you're playing the Super Bowl at home if you get to the Super Bowl. So you might be in a situation where if they get the one seed, they're not even playing on the opening week. You just got to win 2 games. You know both of them are at home, and then you play the Super Bowl at home as well. There's something kind of inspiring about being able to do that. The defense, obviously, it's an issue. It's a Robert Saleh defense that is heavily predicated on just rushing 4 guys and getting home with 4. When you don't have Nick Bosa, that does not work. And so that is an issue to me. There's no doubt about it. The linebacker level has been somewhat of an issue, but I mean, they've been better than I thought that they were going to be without Fred Warner. Yeah. You've got some guys that can be difference makers for you and fly around in the secondary. But ultimately, man, especially how this team looked against the Chicago Bears, that week 14 bye week being the last week that you can have a bye, sometimes as a team, you think you're getting screwed over. You're like, okay, we got to play 13 games in a row before you give us a bye week. What's up with this? Yep. But I'll tell you, Christian McCaffrey looked like he was 24 years old this past week.
And he's been a workhorse this year.
He looked like he was 24 years old.
Unbelievable.
And if you tell me that's the version of Christian McCaffrey that we're going to get throughout the playoffs because he got that week off, can you imagine if this team gets the bye again and you get even more time to rest up? I'm buying this team. I get it. Defense, we got question marks about it, but coach, how Brock Purdy is playing, how they can go to anybody on offense, the versatility of all the tight ends that they have, the run game with Christian McCaffrey, I'm buying the 49ers.
Lions playing well. I am going to sell, but you almost convinced me to change my initial statement because
all right, I was close. I just needed to get close. It's all right.
I know. I have to stick my gut here. It's the offense is awesome. The offense is amazing. Shanahan is adding new stuff, which is so crazy to me that this guy that I think that's just what happens with Shanahan and McVay. Is that people just, zone. It's like he barely runs zone. I mean, they still run zone a lot, but it's like they've molded the run game to change. They've changed what they don't run as all the play action stuff that he built up his name on. They do run play action. It's just different now. The protection's different. The concepts are a little bit different. How they just, he continues to evolve. It's one of the coolest things. So why I think I have so much respect for Kyle Shanahan and McVay is just, it's unbelievable. He's my coach of the year, just all the injury stuff. And then just like, I looked at the back half of the year. Again, these are the splits I looked at. What's been notable is the passing game, no matter what, if it's Mac Jones, Brock Purdy, who's been hurt, who's been not, the passing game has been basically top 5, top 6 this whole year. But the run game was bad the first 8-ish weeks. And so, in the back half of the year, though, it's kind of back. It's back to what you think with Shanahan. 5th in running back rushing success rate since week 9. But the O-line, and this is, I think, significant, They aren't allowing any sacks. Some of that's Purdy moving around. And actually, Mac Jones is actually decent in this regard as well. But second in true sack rate allowed. First in knockdowns allowed. So not just sacks, but just a quarterback getting hit. They've only allowed 7 sacks and 10 hits since week 9. And they're 5th in rushing success rate. They've only allowed 7 sacks in the back half of the year. I think that's... So you're not taking any negative plays, and then you're just popping off explosive, receiver over the middle, receiver outside, tight end, backup tight end when Kittle is out. Doesn't matter. McCaffrey is out for the play. There's Brian Robinson taking a gain for 8 yards. They're first in score rate since week 9. 58% of their drives they score on. Remarkable. Anything above 50% is historical. Mm-hmm. Second in plays of 10 or more yards. Second in gains of 4 or more yards. 37% first down rate. Over a third, almost 40% of their plays go for a first down. Again, insane.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's a historical rate. That's like right. Absurdly high. First in success rate in passing, second overall, second in EPA per play, first in EPA per dropback.
And you're selling this team, Nate?
And I'm selling it because the defense, 27th in defensive DVOA, dead last in sack rate, dead last in pressure rate, dead last in knockdown rate. 31st in stuff rate, and that's against runs. 25th in yards before contact on runs. 32nd in success rate. They allow a 49.7% rushing success rate this year. And cool. I'm going to bring a stat up with the Rams. That's historical. That would be like allowing the best run game ever every single week. 29th in success rate against the pass. They don't give up a lot of explosives, but you can just get at them. Like you mentioned, the solid defense. They like to sit, rush four, kind of predictable. When you have Fred Warner squeezing a lot, like he's freaking Alonzo Mourning in the middle, like it helps out. But when he's not in there, it's pretty gettable. So that's why I'm selling. I think they can win a game. Obviously, they can win 2 games. Just they're going to have a moment where it kind of craps out on them, against these offenses.
If you win
in the
2,
NFC.
They might get Fred Warner back. If they win 2, they might get Fred
I know.
Warner back.
And that's, once you said that, I was like, I know. Yeah. But next year, because all these young, cool defensive players like Upton Stout, I know he got banged up, but Jair Brown's been awesome. Malcolm Mustafa is awesome. They the young guys have really stepped up, so it makes the 2026 49ers truly to me like the contender, like maybe probably the best team. But right now they're just like it's nothing they could do, it's just injuries. But that's kind of why I can't get over the top with them. All right, we got 2 more real quick. Rams, I'm buying.
Easy buy. Yeah,
the defense is gettable, but I think still very good or good.
Even then, like
you can, they can rush 4 and win
100%.
Gotta remember that's the ace in the hole. Like if you can do that, you can get carried to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And then on top of their offense just being freaking awesome. This was the Rams stat I just have to share. They have a rushing success rate of 49.7 on running back runs. That is first. That is the highest mark by any NFL offense since the year 2000. AKA the best run game you have ever seen is this year's Rams offense. That is notable to me, and also notable to me when we talk about MVP, by the way, even though I think Stafford deserves it. If you do give it to Stafford, I'm not mad at you, but I do think it's May's award. Last year, second was last year's Falcons. Third was the 2004 Chiefs. On overall rushing success rate, they're only second behind the 2004 Chiefs. 5.9 average distance to go on third down ranks second since 2000. They use a ton of play action. They can do all this. They can get explosives. They have a great run game. They can go heavy with the tight ends. They can go all the receiver stuff. It's, the offense. And I think the defense has enough game plan stuff and a pass rush that can carry them home.
I was just going to say, I just think that there's so much versatility on this team. Like they have the ability to beat you so many different ways. Yep. And some of the AFC teams, we talked about how like matchup means a lot.
Yeah.
Matchup obviously means something for the Rams, but it's more of like, okay, what's the matchup and how do we exploit it? Because we can do whatever we want on offense. We got the best run game in the NFL, like you mentioned. We have the best one-on-one winner on the ads. Dude, I want to say this about Puka Nacua. He's having an insane year. He's our highest graded wide receiver. He has a 95.7 overall PFF receiving grade this season. He has caught 26 of 37 contested catches. I believe not only the most contested catches ever in a single season, but also by far the highest percentage. Like the other guys who are up there with the most contested catches are having like 50, 55, 60 like contested catch opportunities. Nacua's got 26 on 37 contested catch. Yeah. He 70% so contested 50-50 catch
balls,
rate.
And he's like a 75% guy. Yeah.
I mean, we talk about that all the time. They're like, oh, he turns 50-50 balls into, you know, 90-10 or 80-20. Here, spoiler alert, nobody is that. At the very best, you're hoping that it's 60-65%. And Nakua is sitting here at 70.
God.
Insane.
Almost had one of the greatest catches I've ever seen in my life last night.
Truly.
I still wanted that to be completed. Actually, we have the Eagles too, but Packers real quick, buying or selling the Packers. I'll tell you selling. Defense stinks.
I'm selling the Packers. There's just too many injuries. Many injuries on this team. I think that they could absolutely win a playoff game, but to win four in a row, I just don't trust them. They're just too beat up, in my opinion.
Same. If they were healthy, not even just Parsons, just other guys on their defensive line. It's like, if they were healthy, definitely. But now, not this iteration of them. Love the offense, but defense, 25th in EPA per play. It's every stat I can say. Rushing, they've allowed 145.8 rushing yards a game since week 9, which is 30th. They're bad against receiver targets, which I don't know if you know this, but there's some good receivers in the NFC, so might want to hone that up. So I just don't trust the defense. 29th in EPA per pass, all that stuff. Don't get sacks, don't get stuffs, don't make enough big plays to kind of keep them above. And then the Eagles, just closing it out with the NFC. Eagles, buying or selling the Eagles, the team that is the most confusing team every single year. They have drama every single week, and they win the Super Bowl last year. So what do you think about the Eagles right now?
I have to buy the Eagles just because it's the same DNA that it was.
Yep.
Or I should say it's the same structure that they had last year. But they're volatile. I don't like betting on this team because they have struggled to – establish the identity as a rushing team the way that they did last year. And then specifically, I mean, like, you look at this team and how feast or famine they are. They're 24th in third down percentage this year. I mean, like, this is a team that is not good at converting on third down. And obviously they're not as automatic as they were on third and fourth down last year. What is really saving them is, I believe, they're number one in the NFL this season on red zone percentage. So it's like, when they get into the red zone, they're getting 7 instead of 3 more than any team in the NFL. And it's just like that stat.
But they just have to get there.
Like, that stat is almost like the interception stat with the Bears, where it's like, that's doing so much of the heavy lifting of why you're impactful on that side of the ball, that it's like, I don't love betting on teams like that. I have to say bye because they are the Super Bowl champions. So much of that team is still there. They are so unbelievably talented, but like, I just don't love betting on teams that are as inconsistent with the Eagles. And again, going back to what I've talked about the entire show, you're not winning one game. You have to win 4 games in a row. This team's not getting the bye. They have to win 4 games in a row. And we talked about how good the NFC is. Like, who are they going to play week 1 of the NFC? They're probably going to play,
let me see,
the Rams, the Seahawks, or the 49ers, right? Yeah. You're going to start with one of those teams. There's a good chance that you'll play whoever you didn't play of those three in the second round. And there's a good chance that whoever of the two that you didn't get, you'll play in the NFC Championship. And so it's just a gauntlet of really good teams and really good head coaches that I'm buying them, but I'm basically convincing myself of like why you shouldn't, you should sell them.
I'm buying them because I've learned a lesson with the Eagles. It's like, just, you can't fully ever sell them. They just have always have too much talent. The offense is so frustrating. They have like a historical 3-and-out rate. Didn't have a successful pass play the entire second half against the Bills. And that's the thing, is every time I'm like, yeah, this is the offense, the run game's dropped off, they still win because they have some nice moments. Like, you bring up the Rams game or the Bills game. They got outplayed, but they have the turnovers, but they also have block kicks. They always have moments that step up. Okay, the offense isn't doing anything. At any time, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith could score a touchdown, or Saquon Barkley can take a run to the house. At any time. Doesn't matter how frustrating the whole game's been, at any time. But why I'm buying them more, if you asked me a month ago, I probably would have sold them. But buying them is because the defense is back. Not only just with Jalen Phillips addition, but since their week 9 bye week, this team is 3rd in defensive DVOA. This is a top 5 defense. I think you could really feel it against the Bills. That you always got that Vic Fangio card, man. And he is so well game planned on this stuff. And then going against a lot of offenses there, Shanahan offenses, he's had some success against those over the years. So it's just, that's always going to keep them in games, that the offense just doesn't have to, as long as the offense doesn't completely crap themselves, they can kind of like keep it going and make a run and make it all this stuff. But
yep,
that's why, yeah, I can't sell him. I'm going
to
buy
it's
him.
Hard, it's hard to fully quit him. It really is.
It's like the Seahawks for me. It's like, okay, am I betting on they keep winning games despite Sam Darnold having three turnovers? So it's like, what if they don't? Like, you know, and I know that sounds right. stupid, but it's like same with the Eagles. It's like, what if they're just average on offense for a game? They might blow these teams out by 10. Like, right. Yeah, that's why I can't sell. Yeah, just can never, ever sell them. But all right, we were supposed to get into some college football prospects, but you and I like to chat.
It's true.
We're a little long, and I know you have to get out of here, but is there one guy you're watching or a couple guys of note that you're watching? I know there's Fernando Mendoza. I know there's Dante Moore. Any other guys of note or any favorites for this round of the college football playoff that you want to
yeah,
mention?
You know, honestly, Jacob Rodriguez is somebody that immediately comes to my mind. Obviously, just with an unbelievable year that he has played. And like, depending on who talk to, some people will be like, dude, I draft Jacob Rodriguez in the first round. And other people are like, hey, kind of limited, you know, like with his speed, his size, all that kind of stuff. So I get just getting to really like watch him in a really big game. How much does he lead that defense? How much is the anchor in the middle of that defense? All that good stuff. You know, Dante Moore, another situation where if he makes a deep playoff run, is he in this class as well? Because that totally changes the landscape of the NFL draft. Because if it's just Fernando Mendoza, we're going to get spicy at the top of the draft. I mean, it's going to be
who's your QB3 right now? Like, Moore might not even declare, but like, say Moore declares.
Of the players who haven't announced that they're going back yet, Simpson would still be my QB3. Ty Simpson would still be my QB3. But like, after that, we get into like Garrett Nussmeier. Cade Klubnik, Drew Aller. And like, I think all of those guys are like day three players.
I do too.
So if we take Simpson off of this list, because I kind of think Ty Simpson's going back.
I think he should anyways. But
if you take Dante Moore off, like if Dante Moore all of a sudden goes back to school, you will have we might have one quarterback go in the top 100 of this draft, and he might go number one overall.
Well, yeah, and then just none.
And then nobody until day three, which is a wild, it's a wild exercise for a lot of teams that we know are going to have quarterbacks. So those are a couple of guys that I'm looking forward to seeing. Great. Like Kenyatta Jackson, the edge rusher from Ohio State, you know, does he have a little bit extra juice to him? He's built like an NFL player. CJ Daniels, an underrated wide receiver, I think, for Miami, who to me, I think he's really talented. They just don't really give him the football a lot. So kind of seeing, you know, he's going to break out a little bit this week. He's going up against Ohio State's corner. So it'll be fun. I'm really excited for these matchups that we've got in the college football playoff. For as much as I complain about how we get here with the teams, you know, I change a little bit of things here and there. Topic for another day. That's a whole another hour and a half podcast. I am excited.
See, I avoid that. I just parachute in about prospects. And then when everyone starts going, I'm like, who's the 12th? You know, should Notre Dame get in? I'm like, see you guys. Bye. Yeah. Bye. That's for you guys. I just look at NFL tiebreakers, man.
Honestly,
that's all I care about.
That's a happier existence. That is a happier existence to not get in on all that. But yeah, man, those are a handful of guys that that I'm watching for an exciting quarterfinals coming up.
It is. I know. Ohio State's guys are fired up to watch all those guys. Reese, Stiles, Downs, McDonald.
Yeah.
Just the spine of their defense, basically. Yeah, I was curious. Do you have any running backs? This is my other thing before we leave. I just can't help myself. Any running backs, not in the playoff, just that a guy under the radar that you like? Because I've been trying to figure out this running back class. I like Black from Arizona State.
From Arizona State.
Yeah, I like him. He's kind of been my sneaky day two guy. But is there another guy maybe just that you have a favorite on, a crush on so far?
Honestly, the guy who I currently have as my RB3 in this class, and this is a little spoiler for the NFLSE running back ranking episode we're doing on Friday.
Ooh.
Seth McGowan from Kentucky is my RB3 in this class.
Great call. Love him.
He is an NFL player, man, and got a crazy, like, crazy journey of how he got to this point as well. He was a former four-star recruit. He played in his first year when he was at Oklahoma. He wasn't the starter, but he played in the rotation a little bit. Then he got arrested on a felony charge. He ended up serving some time in jail. Obviously, he got kicked off the team from Oklahoma, and he just, like, I think he then went to like an NAIA school. He went to an FCS school, worked his way back, and like now he's in the SEC. And I know people within the Kentucky program, and they rave about who this dude is now. Like how that was just such a major wake-up call in his life, everything that happened, how he always believed that football was going to be there and how it was almost completely taken from him. And he has truly worked as a player and a prospect, just and a person to get back to this point. And when I watched him at Kentucky, he got hurt in the second half of the season, but I also was told that he was like competitive toughness, gutted it out there, didn't miss a game, didn't want to be out there, didn't want to take this opportunity for granted. The first half of the season or first couple games of the season where he played fully healthy, I'm like, NFL player right there. He's got the explosiveness. He's got the feet behind zone blocking concepts. He's got the patience behind gap scheme blocking concepts. Like, I just think that this is a future NFL player. And from what I have heard about him, and they rave about him at Kentucky, like the ability's there, the work ethic clearly now is there from him. And I think he's a stud. I think he's a future NFL player. I really do.
He's got good size. I remember watching, I've watched two games of him. I like him too. I had him like kind of late third grade, I guess, mm-hmm. would be the best. He'll make my top 100.
I think I had him like late second, early third, but
okay.
In this running back class, that's RB3 to me. So, you know.
And then Brown from Arizona State up there too. Yeah, no, I'm just curious. I'm curious about the second tier running backs, because I think there's just a lot of interesting guys, but I can't get over the top with one of them yet. So I'm kind of picking everyone's brains on that. But Trevor, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so happy to pick your brain about not just buying and selling and the college football playoff and everything else that we have in this wonderful world of football media.
But I appreciate it, Nate.
Thank you again, man.
I always love coming on with you. This is always a great conversation. I know that, it'll be like, all right, we got a hard out at this time or hard out at this time. And we always get to like, 30 seconds before the hard out but hey, we just love talking football, and that's why I enjoy talking with you so much. So I appreciate you having me, man. It's always a good time.
I appreciate it. Yeah, Stone, who we both work with, he loves giving me the stand-up comedian red light. Like, hey, got 1 minute.
Rap.
Hey, let's go home. But yeah, that's why podcasts are great, and maybe not TV. That was one of my first lessons when I did a TV segment. Was like, tighter. Just tighten.
But it's an art. It's definitely an art.
It is. Hey, different forms of media, man. No, but Trevor, thanks again. You can check out all Trevor's stuff on PFF. He's got the big board update coming soon, I believe that you said.
Yes.
And
yes.
I mean, we're getting into the draft season very, very soon. Are you going to Senior Bowl, all that stuff too?
Oh, yeah. Hopefully going to be there for Shrine Bowl, Senior Bowl, all that great stuff.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Trev. You can find Trev's stuff on social media, Tampa Bay Trey. Right? Should I just say
yep.
Trey?
No, nailed it.
T-R-E. Yes. And I've never really said it out loud. So, I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. Make sure to check out Trevor's stuff. It's everywhere. It's great. Him and Connor do a great job. Two of my favorites in all of this world, this wonky world that we do. But subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars here at Football 301. Also, watch us on YouTube, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Some of you are, so thank you. Appreciate it. Like and subscribe there. Thanks to Stone, Austin Madison behind the scenes. Thank you again to Trevor. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.